Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, Oregon had its spring game on Saturday. It was a festive, joyful thing. Like, I think Oregon handled the spring game like a spring game should be handled. I saw a lot of schools who took themselves very seriously for the spring game, and there was a seriousness at Oregon. But they were also having some fun, inviting a lot of alumni, having a concert afterwards. On the scene, Alex Molden, former NFL first-round draft pick, defensive back. We got a lot to talk with Molden about. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm well. I'm hobbling around. I had a little PT today post knee surgery, so I'm feeling good. You've had some knee surgeries in your life.
I have. I know the feeling.
I noticed the last time I asked you how many surgeries you had, you kind of start pointing and counting. You point at your knee, you go, I think I had like four on that one. What is that like for NFL players? Guys who have a career as long as you, I mean, you're going to have some procedures.
You're going to get some procedures, and it's really, getting things cleaned out postseason. For me, I had both my ankles worked on. I had a ACL tear, and then I got scoped in my other one twice, and then I had a sports hernia. So, I mean, I've had, I think, five. And they're all below my belt. So, the defensive back is just all, it's just all with my legs and my ankles. But it's something that, it's going to happen. You're going to get nicked up and you're going to battle through it during the season. And then the off season come January, February. You tend to get that stuff cleaned up.
I want to know what you thought. Let's go back to the draft. Draft happens, probably brings back some memories, but I know you and I have talked about this before. You had a great tweet where you said to NFL rookies, my biggest advice is to not let this sport define who you are. It's simply what you do. What do you mean by that?
So, I mean, a lot of things or a lot of times with these cats, they do something, right? They're playing this sport, and they've been playing it since they were maybe sixth grade, right? And then now they're 21, 22 years old, sometimes 23. And if they're not careful, and they're fed this from coaches and then people that love them, family members that, what they say, eat, sleep, and drink football. Yeah. And then they start to believe in that. And then if they don't, if they're not careful, they start to really believe it. That's their life. And it's not their life. It's just what you do. That's it. Because if you start to believe that, like, that's your life, well, what happens when, you step away from the game? Most of the time it's going to be, not on your own terms. So if you have that type of mentality where when football is now taken away from you, now it's like you have nothing else, right? Or you don't know who you are, which happened to me. I was lost. When I stepped away from the game. So I had to find myself. I had to figure out, like, who Alex Molden really was, outside of just being a football player. And so it's one of the things that, it starts at home. Like, I preach to my, to my kids, not all of them, even if they, if they play football or play in the NFL or don't. It's like, you need to find out exactly who you are because, you don't want to be defined by that thing that you do, whether it's, playing ball or being working in the industry, in the the business sector. You don't want to be defined by that.
I think it's great advice for everybody. Alex, how hard is that to do when you are when there's so much money involved and you're being told by coaches, you just got picked. Here's the first phone call. Now here's the playbook. Now get to minicamp. I mean, the teams really do want to draw the players in. So how do you find that balance amid all of that?
I think, having a solid foundation, it'd be great if you can, you get that from folks who have who have walked that journey, and they can see the big picture. I think having, you know, your faith, that also helps, because you don't want to be, you know, something goes wrong or it doesn't go your way, then you start to think that you're a terrible person, not just a terrible football player, but a terrible person, especially if you're getting paid millions of dollars. So, you know, it starts with just doing that deep dive into who you are and having like a mentor, right? Like some of the guys, Anthony Newman was a great mentor for me. And I mean, helped me out tremendously, you know, and just like helping me become a pro and then, you know, learn things about myself outside of the game.
That's great. How did you find Newman? Was it because of your connection with Oregon, or how do you connect with him?
Man, it's funny because I went to, he had me come up, me and Ricky Whittle, we came up and assisted in his football camps that he used to have, right? We were going into our senior year, it was summertime, and he had us come up to kind of volunteer and assist. So I got a chance to meet him, you know, see him. He introduced me to a bunch of like other NFL guys that I looked up to for so long. And then, you know, just so happened the next year, the Saints drafted me. Well, he was on the Saints. And so we already had a connection with us both going to Oregon. But then also, you know, I volunteered at his football camp. And then now, you know, I'm playing with him. So he took me under his wing, man. And it was one of the best things I could have wished for, that, you know, somebody who you know, didn't see me as a threat, right? Because a lot of times these guys who just got drafted, especially in the first, second, you know, third rounds, guys are going to be looking at them like, hey, they're coming to take my job. And so, you know, depending on their maturity level of them, you know, you want them to be looked at as teammates, not just somebody who's going to take my job.
Michael Penix goes in the first round. Kirk Cousins just signed a $100 million deal with Atlanta. Could immediately feel that tension, right? Like, and so can a coaching staff do something to help with the tension, or does that have to be sorted out in practice or between players? How does that go down?
You know what? It has to go down between the players. And, you know, just watching, I don't know Kirk Cousins, but I was able to watch that show with that quarterback.
Yeah.
Quarterback, yeah. Something. But I watched the show, and, man, I got to learn a lot about Kirk Cousins. Like, he's a pretty cool dude, family dude. You know, he knows the business, and he has a certain maturity about him. He's been doing this for a long time. And so I would think that, you know, he's going to take him under his wing and you know, help him mature, because, you know, football is going to be injuries. And it's in the quarterback, the most important position. If he goes down, man, that can tank a whole season. So, you know, helping him along the way, he's going to get paid regardless, right? Kirk Cousins is. So, man, I think it starts with him developing a relationship with Penix. But Penix got to be the one that kind of, you know, he needs to be on board too and not be afraid to ask. You know.
What is it like that, you know, you've been through this both yourself as a player and then your son Elijah, you know, not that long ago drafted by the Titans. You know, you've been through this and watched it and kind of tried to help your own kid navigate it. But what is it like after the draft, the days after the draft, the whole process of moving, mini camps, getting the playbook? Take us through that.
Well, you know, I mean, you're excited. You're, you know, it's a dream come true, but it's just the beginning, right? The next week, well, typically what happens is you do all your press stuff, right? You've done all that. And then you'll be there. If you're a first rounder, you know, they'll fly you out, you meet everybody, and then you go back home. But the first mini camp, which would be here in a couple of weeks. And so, you know, you go in there and you're picking up the playbook. You're learning the language. You're learning, you know, what it's like, because, I mean, it's going to be different. You're spending more time, right? You're more time at the facilities, more time watching film. And so, you know, just being over there longer, learning the language, getting to know the guys. And these guys are going to be from different areas, right? It's not like in college where they're all from the West Coast, if you're on the West Coast. Like, it was my first time interacting with dudes from the Deep South. And so they have a different language, you know, and they communicate a little bit different. So just learning all of that, you know, and it starts to happen during that first mini camp. But once you get into training camp, man, things start to slow down. For a rookie, things are going to be super fast, but they will start to slow down.
I am looking at the spring game on Saturday and looked like it was a lot of fun, but you give me an idea from a defensive back standpoint. What kind of talent do you see at Oregon right now?
Man, defensive back, because, you know, that's funny you asked that, because I was watching a lot of the corners and the safeties and just seeing, like, how quick and explosive they are, and actually how long they are. I think we're in a good place. We're in a good place. There were some dudes. I don't know all the names just yet. I just kind of know some of the numbers. Number 11, I think he plays safety. I like the footwork and the technique of number 8. We look pretty good. So, I mean, I'm excited. One thing, though, typically during these spring games and during preseason, defense, you know, they come together a little bit faster than the offense. And I didn't see that. I saw some big plays happening on the offensive side of the ball. So it's not concerning. I mean, what is it? It's April, you know, yeah. nothing to start to panic about, but it just, you know, typically the defenses start to come together. We got some big dudes, you know, with them defensive yeah. linemen, defensive tackles. Yeah, we got some size.
Yeah. 11.
Overall, I look pretty good.
11's a freshman, Dakota Fields, and you're also talking about Dante Manning, who's a senior, number 8. You know, you're funny. You sound like a coach. 11, 8. I can remember being on the phone with the coaches, and they'll all just say number 5, and then I got to pull the roster up, and I'm looking at the roster. You know, I thought the size is what jumped out at me. It looked like a physically imposing Oregon team. I'm not used to seeing that.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I was standing behind, like, I went to go see some of my old teammates, and so I was in the end zone, right at the same point where, you know, the offense was going out. And I remember seeing my guy, the quarterback just transferred from Oklahoma.
Yeah, Dylan Gabriel.
Okay, Dylan Gabriel. And, man, the lineman that was, you know, protecting him, and he threw this ball. I don't know how on God's earth did he see his receiver, because I was standing behind, I couldn't see anything, but he threw it, and it was a big completion, and, you know, the crowd went crazy. But it's just like, man, we got some dudes that, you know, look the part, look like NFL dudes, and it didn't used to be like that.
It is always, you know, I try to, you know, people ask me, how good is Oregon? How good is Oregon State? And I'm going, you know, you can't tell. I mean, can you tell? Can you get a sense of, you know, this is a 10-win team or an 8-win team? Or are you just in a spring game looking for individual performances? You actually need to see them, you know, in the fall or maybe in their first couple of games.
Yeah, for me, now doesn't, like, I can't see anything. I can't tell you how Oregon's going to be. You know, they're playing against each other. They know each other's routes. They know, you know, the positives and negatives. So it's really hard to be able to tell how well they're going to do. If, you know, we're going to have a top 10 defense. You know, right now, what I saw, no, it doesn't look that part. But I don't know who's even, like, the starters. You know what I'm saying? So it's just hard to say. You just want to come in, see dudes compete, see how they progress from day one of spring ball to, you know, to the game, and see if there's been any improvement. And then from there, you know, let them compete again once fall camp starts. And then you start to get a better eye. Because, like, you know, I've been to a couple of the practices, and, you know, they're elite practices, number one. And then with elite dudes that, man, they do the right things. And everybody hustles. Everybody runs to the ball. Everybody's bought in. But I really can't tell you if they're going to be a 12-win, you know, national championship team of the practice in the spring game.
You know what else I noticed? I watched like 12 spring games, okay? I was just sitting post-knee surgery watching games all day, and it was fun to kind of flip around and see how different they were. But I noticed that a lot of the teams that used to – they used to say, we're going to put all our ones in for a series and let them play. Nobody did that, and I think it's because – they don't want to tell the players you're not a starter. And so they really mixed up the firsts and the seconds and the thirds, and you couldn't really tell who were the ones, who were the twos. I think they're worried about kids getting in the portal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now it's like if they don't like or if they get word that they're number two even before the game, man, they can jump in the portal. And I think it's closing here in the next day or two.
Yeah,
so
tomorrow.
So these dudes, man, they jump in. If they don't like how they play it or even how they got in the game, they can just jump ship. And, you know, I don't think that's right, but it is what it is. That's the culture today. But I like how Oregon is very strategic on how they do everything, whether it's how they, you know, like you just said, who's starting, who's playing, or even the game. The game is like at the end of April, where most of teams in America, you know, they're early April or mid-April. Well, they pushed it back for a reason. So guys don't just jump ship, you know, and have time to get in the portal and get picked up elsewhere. So, but that's the culture. That's the culture what it is today.
All right, give me an idea. As a player, you know, we've talked about this. Draft day is really exciting for these rookies who are getting drafted. But as a veteran, you even brought it up. They're all watching the draft going, you know, who are they picking? I'm thinking about, like, the 49ers. They got Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel. They're watching the Niners pick two wide receivers. They have to – it's not a happy day for everybody, is it?
Absolutely. Let me tell you something. I watched the draft, and the reason I watched the draft – specifically of the Tennessee Titans. I was like, please don't pick a safety in the first, second, or third round. Don't pick no safeties. And I watched it. They didn't pick a safety. Because, you know, what I hear from my son is like, hey, you know, we love you. We like how you are progressing. You're professional. You do this. You're smart. You all this type of stuff. They can say all that stuff. But actions speak louder than words, right? When I was watching the draft, they did not pick a safety. They picked offensive linemen. They picked linebackers. They picked, you know, receiver. They did all this other stuff. And so I was like, huh, their words are matching their actions. So they do like my son, right?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, once you get drafted or, you know, when you start to watch it and, you know, as a player, you're thinking the same thing. Oh, man, they better not pick no, you know, a corner. Man, I don't want them picking a corner. Does that mean they're coming after me or that maybe the other corner? You know, because, you know, it happened to me, right? On both sides of it. I was the one that was picked in the first round, and I was coming to take somebody's job. And then towards the end of my career, you know, with the fifth pick, the San Diego Chargers picked Quentin Jammer. And I knew that he was coming for me. You know, so it's a happy day, but also a sad day.
Yeah, and when they pick Quentin Jammer, do you immediately pack your bag and go to the gym, or how do you react to that?
My first reaction, man, I'm calling. I called my wife. He called a realtor. We leaving. That was my first reaction. What you talking about? I was like, we out. You know, because the next phone call is going to be from the GM saying, hey, you know, we're letting you go. Or are we trading you? So, yeah, that was my first, you know, it wasn't about hitting the gym, man. I was sad. When they picked Quentin, I was sad.
And yet you go on and you play longer than Quentin Jammer. There has to be a measure of satisfaction in that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great. And, you know, when you have somebody like that, especially a young cat, doesn't have all the experience but has a ton of ability. Like, it pushes you. Like, drafting the Chargers, drafting Quentin, man, I had my best year because he was He wanted to get on the field, and I didn't want him to get on the field. So I had to play my butt off to stay on the field. So, you know, it's good sometimes to have to be pushed, you know.
There he is. First-team All-American in college, first-round draft pick, Alex Molden. Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Love what you're doing.
Thank you. Alex Molden, there he goes. I love that perspective, Stephen. He's watching the Tennessee Titans draft. They go tackle, linebacker, defensive tackle, and he's like, okay, that matches what they're telling my kids. So that's good. That's good for business and good for his career. Good stuff from Alex Molden. Grab the podcast if you missed it. I thought his wisdom there, where he talks about players not allowing their identity to become their job. It's not who you are, it's what you do. I think we could all get something from that. I do think men in particular, so we sort of make our jobs our identity, and it shouldn't be. And I've had great conversations with Alex about that and really trying to figure out, like, you know, he had to figure out after football, who is he? You talk about being a jarring conversation with yourself. All right, leave it here. Our big splash coming up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.